Like all great art, popular films create their own world filled with so much detail and nuance that it gets fans to come up with some amazing theories as to what's really going on.
Why were the Dursleys, Harry Potter's adopted family, so mean to him? Why do Danny and Sandy take off in a car that flies through the sky at the end of Grease? And why does Biff Tannen in Back to the Future 2 bear a remarkable resemblance to Donald Trump?
Today, we're taking a look at some of the most outrageous fan theories of popular films that give an amazing twist to your favorite movies of all time.
Join us for this on All the Hot News. Plus, NBC is bringing back Will and Grace, or as we like to call it, the Jack and Karen Show.
Alaska Thunderfuck is now selling motorcycles on Celebrity Apprentice.
And the prankster who changed the Hollywood sign to Hollyweed surrenders.
I am Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Did you know that rainbows come from unicorns? Well, they do. They really, really do. And I've got just the t-shirt to prove it. Get yours today at feastoffun.com/store.
Dun, 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 dun. Summer love. Well, it's actually winter. Had me a blast. I stayed at home watching the TV. Watch Grease. I watched Grease 2. I watched.
Which did you like better?
Oh, there's parts of Grease 2 that I really, really enjoy Michelle Pfeiffer looks in the movie, even though. What's the hunk?
Maxwell Caulfield
and Michelle Pfeiffer star in Grease 2, mm-hmm. which is the very awkward, strange sequel to Grease. And for some reason, I always think of Michelle Pfeiffer as much older than mm-hmm. him. And so it looks like he's trying to seduce his mother.
Well, women do mature faster than men do. So what was the age difference? Did you look it up on the thing?
I did.
It's not that much. Yeah. They were about the same. I think they were 26 or 28 when they did the movie.
And, Michelle Pfeiffer walking around singing, she wants to ride a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I want a cool rider, a C-O-O-L-R-I-D-E-R. When you spell out the title of the song, it's because the songwriter has no idea what else to say.
Grease was such a big success that they're like, hey, we have to have a sequel to it.
Yeah, the movie Grease was phenomenal when it came out. Mm. It not only cemented Olivia Newton-John, as we used to call her back in the day, ONJ.
Oh, you did?
Well, I didn't, but the gays do.
Okay.
ONJ. I'm not a Time Lord, which we'll get to later on in the show. But, the gays back in the day called Olivia Newton-John ONJ, and they made John Travolta huge stars because of the success of Grease. Mm-hmm.
Well, he also had just come off of Saturday Night Fever, right?
Yeah.
So, and those two films.
Yeah, they said, John Travolta, man, there's no way anyone's ever going to think you're gay.
Ever.
Ever. And so, and I was listening to, I think it was a radio discussion on Shakespeare on NPR of all places, where they were talking about how great works of art inspire people to read between the lines. Mm-hmm. And that it's possible that even though the filmmakers or, writers or painters didn't intend for their works to be interpreted in these ways, because they captured the public's imagination, people eventually are going to start seeing things that weren't necessarily in these films. And so Grease, the original Grease movie, mm-hmm. Had this wonderful fan theory that you were drawing my attention to.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, mm-hmm. they fly in a car up into heaven.
Yeah, well, they fly. They're at this carnival. They're all dancing. They're all singing. And then Sandy and Danny, the stars of the show, get into the vehicle. And then they just take off. And then they just start flying off into the sky. And so some fan theories are out there that, it's because they died and they flew away. And everything that you saw in Grease was Sandy's dream as she's drowning. Because remember, we see her at the beginning of the Grease movie, and Danny he saves her. He's a lifeguard, and then that's how their romance starts. And so they imagine that Sandy's at the beach. She goes in, she looks at Danny, she's drowning, and then he tries to save her, but no, she dies. But she imagines before her death this, going to school and staying, and I'm going to be here, and I'm going to make friends with these people, and they go through these hardships. But in the end, everything turns out right. Nobody's pregnant. Everybody gets back together. People go back to school. All of that.
Yeah, Rizzo is not knocked up. Mm-hmm. Kaneki suddenly decides he actually loves her. The geeky kid gets onto the sports team. Everything is suddenly okay. Yeah. Just the way sweet, innocent Sandy would want it to be.
Yeah.
But think about this alternate theory.
What?
Sandy never existed to begin with.
What?
And it was Danny who died as a lifeguard. And it was his dream because he...
He wanted a different...
He imagined a girl, the perfect girlfriend who was both pure and wicked.
Oh, the Madonna whore complex.
Exactly. And what did he name her?
Sandra D.
Sandy, as of the sand on the beach.
Oh.
So there's two alternate fan theories is that Greece is a fever. Greece is the word. It's a fever dream of Sandra D. Or that Danny actually is the one who died and he imagined everything, including the perfect car, one that would take him to heaven. Because Greece Lightning
was the car.
Was the car. I think I actually like thinking
you like
about
him dying better.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense because Grease Lightning, the car that they transform in the movie, sort of pops in and out of this ideal world, and also beauty school dropout also takes place with an angel of played by Frankie
Avalon, right?
Avalon, yeah. So there's a lot of like ideas that maybe somebody's imagining this happening in a fever about to die.
Well, the thing is like when you look at musicals and a lot of movies, they're all kind of like these idealized kind of thing. And so that can kind of have heavenly qualities to it. But the thing is, you have to remember, before it was a movie, it was a stage play, right? Mm-hmm. It was a stage musical. And so there was no car that flew off to heaven in the musical. So if it was a fever dream of like you dying just before your death, then that was something for the movies and it wasn't something in the original source material.
But why have the characters fly into heaven in the first place?
You know, they just thought it would be like a cutesy kind of thing. It was just like, hey, we're just taking off and look, we're riding high.
It feels very nonsensical.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of blogs and websites and forums that examine movies where the characters were dead all along.
Oh, yeah.
One of the movies is Gravity, Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, where Sandra Bullock is the only surviving person in that space shuttle and everything, and how she luckily escapes and eventually returns to Earth are just more fantasies dreamed up as she suffocates to her
death. You say Earth. I think she landed on the Planet of the Apes when she came back. Because you hear that.
Damn dirty apes. The movie Ghostbusters, they're not supposed to cross the streams, right?
Right, because they have, what is it, the
proton guns.
Their proton guns are like, don't cross the streams, you'll die. And they do it to defeat the enemy, right?
Well, they may or may not have defeated Gozer, the enemy, right? And they're saying that at the happy ending that they have at the end might be a complete fantasy. And that explains Ghostbusters 2, which is purgatory, where they are forced to relive the events suspiciously similar to the first movie time and time again. So who are you going to call? Ghostbusters for infinity. the movie Up, you know, with the old man is served an eviction notice.
Sure. And he goes on a wild adventure with a young scout to South America because he dreamed of going there with his departed wife.
Well, he dies in his bed and that young scout is guiding him to his afterlife. And he's just an angel.
Oh, but I have to say no to that, too, because like at the end, they return back to his home and he continues to see him.
That's like, true.
There's imagery where they see him again.
What about the movie Groundhog Day? I'm not too familiar with it, but one of the themes of it is that he...
Is this a dead one, too?
Well, yeah, that Bill Murray died, and he stuck... It's not that he's stuck in a time loop. Mm-hmm. Is that he's actually slips in the shower and dies...
So it's
before ending up in purgatory.
No, there is a purgatory kind of aspect to it. Now, of course, I have to say it is one of my favorite movies of all time just because I was born on Groundhog's Day. So it's nice to...
Somebody wants the listeners to send them a birthday present.
And so it's, it is a really good movie. And what's nice about it, too, is it does bear repeated viewing. So it could be a case of purgatory. And then eventually he does figure out how to make his life better. And then, you know, he wakes up again on February 3rd.
And so, that's how, so that it's kind of one of those movies when You know, I think, who was that? Heaven Can Wait.
Mm.
He was a football player. Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
What do you know the plot of this movie?
I forget he was a football player and he comes back. Does he come back as a girl or something?
Ghost Dad with Bill Cosby is another. It's they die, but they can't go to heaven yet.
Yeah.
The movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze. Yeah. Similar plot.
That's another movie. We're going to do another show coming up. Why do women fall in love with ghosts?
So sexy ghosts.
Those sexy fucking ghosts. They just, women just love them.
Well, the quick answer to that is because it's an archetype. It's an archetype.
Okay.
In Greek mythology. Okay. But we'll save that for another show.
Yeah.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is another where all the characters have died, mm-hmm. and the Chocolate Factory is hell.
Oh yeah, because the kids all get their comeuppance.
Indiana Jones in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't survive the nuclear explosion in the beginning of the movie. He just lays down once he rolls out of the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
He just lays down there in the ground and imagines the rest of the movie as a fever dream.
Boy, he's got a son. He reunites with his the mother of his child. He gets to see aliens, all that kind of stuff. I don't know if I buy that one so much either.
But there's some other more sinister and darker fan mm-hmm. theories. And this one will probably keep you up at night.
Are you talking about the one I think you're talking about?
I have to tell you guys about Back to the Future. So Back to the Future 2 especially
mm-hmm.
Is a movie that has been talked about a lot this past year because of the amazing similarities between the character of Biff, right? The villain of the movie. He uses his profits from his towering casino to help shake up the Republican Party before eventually assuming political power himself in what becomes a lawless dystopian wasteland, the United States. Biff, or President Trump, mm-hmm. encourages every citizen to call him America's greatest living folk hero.
Mm.
Now, the Back to the Future 2 screenwriter, Bob Gale, was told the Daily Beast in an interview that Marty McFly's arch nemesis, the wealthy villain Biff Tannen, actually was based on Donald Trump when he wrote the film.
Wow.
So that...
Because he was a pop culture icon even back then.
Yeah, and he was, seen by New York City people as kind of a jerk, mm-hmm. as an asshat, yeah. and so, and certainly had political aspirations even back then, and as somebody who could not be trusted. But what's really amazing about fan theories, and this one is really has over 3 million views.
Oh, it's crazy.
Is that Back to the Future predicted the events of September 11th, and that filmmaker Robert Zemeckis is actually a time traveler.
Because he knew, because he was able to put so much into Back to the Future 2 about what happened on 9/11. And it's nuts. And it's the attention to detail that people have gone into examining this movie is crazy.
So the first Back to the Future film takes mm-hmm. place in a science experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Where a mad scientist, mm-hmm. Rick,
yeah.
Convinces Morty. Wait a minute. Wrong movie.
Well, that's also another yeah. fan theory that he actually yeah. dies in the experiment. And so there's another one, and everything is like an imagination after he, before he dies.
So the mad scientist is testing his time machine that he is able to build with stolen plutonium that he got from Muslim terrorists. And the experiment takes place at the Twin Pines Mall, which symbolizes the World Trade Center mm-hmm. towers. There, a surprise attack by Muslim terrorists happens. The Twin Pines Mall sign is, if you hold it upside down, it reads the time 9/11.
Mm.
When he travels back in time, there's only one lone pine instead of two, mirroring what happened to the World Trade Center towers, which were demolished.
And then they built one tower.
And they built one. Also in the movie, Doc holds up two stopwatches with a time 1:19 a.m. on them, which upside down is 9/11. When Marty's future family is watching TV in the Back to the Future 2, the Twin Pines, an images of Twin Pines mm-hmm. crossfade into a photo of the actual World Trade Center towers.
Wow. Oh, my God. Did Osama bin Laden watch this movie? What
I think happened? He may have written it. Then we watch the slide upside down from the vantage point of his dad, who's hanging upside down in one of these futuristic contraptions. it looks like the towers are collapsing.
Oh my gosh.
And then also in the, you know, the clock tower, they're trying to save the tower. They keep saying in the movie, save the tower, save the tower. And the lightning strikes the tower. Guess where the hands are pointing?
9/11.
To 9/11. Holy shit. But wait, there's more.
What?
When the car travels back in time at the clock tower, a flaming 9/11 is superimposed on the movie screen again. The path of the car flames is 11. And then there's a street sign in the shape of a 9.
Oh my God.
Next to it. So, you know, and what do you think about that? I mean, this amazing coincidence and similarities.
So people are people thinking, like, the fan theory is that like Osama bin Laden watched this and then organized it to have this kind of repercussion, or what is it?
They're saying that maybe snakes or serpents from other planets are controlling everything, because there's like Illuminati references.
Is it just a weird circumstance? It's coincidence.
Well, and this is what a lot of people who study the works of William Shakespeare will tell you, that throughout the course of history, because William Shakespeare's works have been so significant, not just in how we think about plots and characters and theory, theater and film theory even, but in British colonialism, you know, the fact that Shakespeare is one of the greatest achievements of British culture and therefore must be exported into around the world and is the uncontested champion of the pinnacle of all civilization. And so everybody from, you know, vegans and religious fundamentalists and everybody with an agenda has always read something into Shakespeare's work. And so, like a lot of great films, they echo on people's hopes and dreams and worldviews.
And because Back to the Future was about going into the future and then going back, is that, you know, people are like, something's going to happen. Is it going to predict? So they're looking to make something happen from it.
What about the Wizard of Oz film? There's a lot of people talking, of course, obviously, that, you know, it's all just a dream. And even the film sort of, you know,
alludes that it alludes might just be that. Really a dream. Well, you know, in the books, you know, Dorothy visits the land of Oz many, many times. And it's usually through some form of calamity, whether it's an earthquake, a tidal wave, you know, or a tornado, a cyclone. But the one fan theory is that because, like, everybody in Oz has like a counterpart to like her family members, her uncles, you know, the wizard, all those people that she met, the Wicked Witch. But Dorothy has no counterpart except for the Wicked Witch of the East, who she drops the house on.
And what makes you think that she's her counterpart?
Well, because she doesn't have like, Dorothy doesn't really have a counterpart, and it's those shoes, like those shoes fit her. You know,
I guess, you know, she could have had big feet or little feet, or I mean, and it's there were like, munchkins,
right? It's kind of like Cinderella, you know. So it's like, you know, if the shoe fits, you must acquit.
So you're saying that maybe it was a sister rivalry, because that's kind of like Return to Oz. There is that theme again. Is that the Wicked Witch doesn't really get along very well with her sister.
They don't get along with each other.
Yeah,
and so they're kind of like they're nemesises.
And maybe Dorothy reminds her of her sister.
Very much. And so, yeah, I mean, it could be something like that. But it's like, you know, I wouldn't read too much into it. It's just a little girl's adventure into another world.
How about the movie Titanic? Jack is a time traveler. Yeah. Why is he a time traveler?
Well, because he shows up, you know, he's got no money. So he's kind of like, so, you know, if you're traveling through time, you probably don't have any cash, right? So
you can't spend cash.
You can't. What do you mean?
If you travel through time and you bring cash from the future with you, it's technically counterfeit cash.
So you'll get arrested.
Yes.
And so he gambles to make money to get on the ship. And he's kind of obsessed with the girl right away. He wants Rose. Like, he's like, you know, it's, of course, there's love at first sight, but there's something about her that, like, I have to, like, save her from her situation, because maybe she's going to go on to do something. But then he also mentioned certain landmarks that weren't around when the Titanic sailed, like Lake Wissota and the Santa Monica Pier. They weren't there. He also has a haircut and a backpack that weren't from that era. They were from some other kind of era.
And so what was he trying to get her to accomplish? I mean, I guess she was critical to some...
you know what? If he didn't save her, then she probably wouldn't have had babies, and then maybe it was his great great grandmother or something.
Oh, so it was yeah. a Marty McFly Back to the Future.
We've got to save her.
And so in this movie, Marty McFly dies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what about Mary Poppins?
Well, Mary Poppins, this is the weird thing too, is like there's a lot of fan theories out there that says that like certain characters like Willy Wonka or Mary Poppins, that they're Time Lords. And now that comes from the Doctor Who universe. And they think that Mary Poppins was because, you know, she has an unusual way of traveling because she's got this umbrella. She only comes when she's really needed, which
like
Doctor Who always just kind of pops up. And she also has like, he has that TARDIS, which is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. She has a purse that's very much like that too, because she carries all that stuff in her purse. And then she knows she does her business, she saves the day, and then she flies away. Now, there was a series, I believe there's a series of books with Mary Poppins in it.
P.L. Travers, yeah.
And so she wrote, like, this is not the only book that she wrote with Mary Poppins in there. But that's kind of, you know, this is written before Doctor Who, so... And I believe that Willy Wonka, you know, I'm not sure when Willy Wonka was written because Doctor Who came out in the 1950s. And so, you know, Willy Wonka being a Time Lord, maybe, you know.
Well, my favorite movies of all time is actually Saving Mr. Banks, which sort of, I don't know how realistic it is, but it talks about the making of the film Mary Poppins and how P.L. Travers, the woman who wrote the books, had a very adversarial relationship with the musicians and the screenwriters and even Walt Disney himself.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Mary Poppins was kind of based on, what was it, her aunt that kind of that came to help the family deal with the aftermath of her father's death, a father that she very much loved, even though he was problematic.
One thing I really like about Mary Poppins, and I'm a huge classic Mary Poppins fan.
Oh, yeah, you love it. Your whole family loves it. Yeah, it's weird.
It's great.
So your family needed rescuing. That's what
Let's go fly a kite. But so in the musical, if you ever got a chance to see the musical, there is a evil Mary Poppins that takes over the household.
Yeah, I wonder why they cut her out.
She was part of other books.
Okay.
And so when they adapted the Mary Poppins, Disney adapted Mary Poppins into a musical, they incorporated other plots and characters from P.L. Travers' book series, making it a much, much richer show. And in the musical, they actually really do fly through the air with the greatest of ease on the wings of a kite and other things.
Yeah, it's great if you ever get the chance to see like a touring production of it where they actually can fly and walk around. Now, one fan theory that gets around the people, you know, it's a much loved film, is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And, you know, Ferris Bueller has a sidekick in the movie, Cameron, who's kind of like this stuck up, you know, repressed kid. And the fan theory out there is that, you know, Cameron is actually the star of the film, and Ferris Bueller is just his imagination, and it's a way for him to kind of like get away from his insular self. Because Ferris is like this guy that can do anything, and I want to be exactly like him.
Yeah. So Alan Rook plays Cameron Fry. Mm-hmm. I think Alan later on he was on a TV show
with Michael J. Fox. I think
Was it Michael J.
Yeah,
Fox?
Yeah, I think he played a mayor or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, and Matthew Broderick. So they're sort of sides of, you know, the id and the superego. Mm-hmm. You know, the conservative, restrained side, and Matthew Broderick's Ferris Bueller is this playful, fun loving, you know, anything can happen kind of character, and so they balance each other out. And Mia Sara plays Sloane Peterson, which is the ideal love interest for Matthew Broderick's character, Ferris Bueller. And a lot of people say that it dovetails beautifully into the movie Fight Club.
Because that's another kind of thing where, like, the one guy is just an imagination in this other guy's head.
And that's, when we talk about movies, hopefully you haven't seen them and we're not spoiling you too
much. Well, yeah, but everybody knows about it. So, you know, it's from the mid 90s, right?
Yeah.
Fight Club.
It's like, is there a term, you know, it's like, what in a movie like Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back? It's like,
Luke,
spoiler alert. Yeah.
What? How did that happen? Now, to me, like, this doesn't really hold true because I keep thinking, like, if it was just about, like, you know, Ferris being a figment of his imagination, then why does, like, so much stuff happen at the school with Ferris's sister, and then the sister's like goes to Ferris's home and then tries to catch Ferris doing stuff, and then she catches, you know, the principal there and like knees him in the balls, and then he gets arrested for child pornography, which happened in real life but not in the movie. So it's like, I don't know if I buy this fan theory. I just think that he just looks up to Ferris, and Ferris is a cool dude.
Well, let me unpack what you're saying okay. there. So actress Jennifer Grey,
yeah,
who star, you know, nobody puts baby in the corner, star of Dirty Dancing. She made a huge hit as Ferris Bueller's sexually frustrated, angry sister, Jeannie Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
And she connects with the boy in the police station, played by Charlie Sheen. And he helps her get her his groove back. And ultimately, at the end of the movie, she kind of saves Ferris from getting caught.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, Jeannie Bueller, Jennifer Grey, catches Principal Rooney, who's trying to, you know,
catch
Ferris Bueller in almost an obsessive way, as if he was this pedophile who had this love-hate relationship, tormented mm-hmm. by the irresistible Ferris Bueller. In real life, actor Jeffrey Jones, is he now in jail?
I don't know if he's still in jail. I don't know what's going on.
But was arrested on the charges
his career is over.
Pedophilia or
child pornography. I don't remember.
And has probably served some time in prison, but don't quote me on that because I'm just pulling this out of my memory and not. I don't have the notes in front of me.
His career is dead, that's for sure.
You know, and the thing about it is like, I think, you know, in examining all these wild alternative fan theories, part of it is, you know, and when you're going on YouTube and you watch a lot of these conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. which are very popular with fans of Donald Trump, these are people that, you know, there's a lot of like loneliness. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of like finding different angles to the same story, because that's what great art does. It inspires our own imagination to tell our own stories. Mm-hmm. But when it fails, the human mind sort of eats itself mm-hmm. and creates a conspiracy theory that isolates people, that makes people not believe in science, and ultimately take actions that hurt themselves, but like electing Donald Trump to be mm-hmm. president. So that's what I thought, you know, it was kind of interesting to look at these alternative fan theories of some of our favorite films mm-hmm. because they sort of make us understand sometimes sure. the mind of a Trump supporter.
Right. Well, it also can redeem some characters, too, because when you look at it from a different kind of perspective, because, you know, we've all seen the Harry Potter movies or read the books, you know, and we always wonder with Dumbledore, it's like, why did Dumbledore go send Harry to stay with the Dursleys, who just treated him like garbage? Now, the Mrs. Dursley, I think Peony, was, you know, Harry's aunt. And Dumbledore said, because this is a home, you know, it has the protection of love. And so, like, you know, Voldemort cannot get you in this house. But we're just kind of like, well, these people don't love him. They're mean to them. They're horrible to him. Why would he send them there? And one fan theory is out there is because, you know, spoiler alert here, is that, you know, Voldemort separated his soul into different pieces and put them into different things called Horcruxes. And a piece of Voldemort's soul went into Harry. And we see, like, in the last book, one of the other Horcruxes that Ron Weasley was carrying it, and it kind of made him crazy and mean. And so the reason why the Dursleys may have been very nice people in the beginning, but because of all the time they spent with Harry and he had this evil entity inside of them, it made them go mad. And so they were like, I've got this evil. What would you do if you had the bad seed in your house?
Voldemort intentionally put part of his soul into Harry Potter, or was it an accident?
So okay. when they had that accident in the house that killed Harry's mother, that's when part of it went into Harry.
And so part of the whole Harry Potter series then is like, mm-hmm. you know, create one storyline like, where's the Horcrux in this book? Where's the Horcrux in that book?
Well, the Horcruxes don't really come till later. You don't realize that that's what's happening. Okay. You know, so you understand like this is part of it and that's part of it. And you're like, oh, there's many of them and that's why it happened. Because he, you know, there's magical numbers. And so I think he put it into seven because seven is a magical number. So he split his soul into seven different pieces. And then some characters you look at in a completely different way. When you watch Peter Pan, you think, hey, Peter Pan's this fun-loving kid. He's going to take these kids on this adventure. They're going to be on this island. They're never going to grow up. But some people look at Peter Pan as though he's the agent of death. And so that he's actually taking these small children to die, because that's why they go to the Neverland, where they never grow up.
Because
now,
they're dead.
Yeah. Now, in the original story, they thought that like Peter Pan murdered the Lost Boys, before they became an adult. And so they were just like, you're stuck permanently as a child. And I believe, they may actually made a movie about like the making of Peter Pan, and the guy who wrote it,
J.M. Barrie.
Yeah, J.M. Barrie. He had he was friends with his family, and one of the kids died. And so that was like kind of the central focus of the story. And so I think that's kind of part of that reason. And so Peter Pan is the angel of death.
Or agent of death.
Yes.
Is it correct to say angel or agent?
Angel or is agent of, or just death.
Finding just Mr. Death, Black. And then there are some movies that are really stupid, mm-hmm. like Finding Mr. Black. Meet Mr. Black? Or is it Brad Pitt plays the devil? Oh, anyways. So here in Chicago, a lot of people are gearing up to protest Trump's inauguration. Mm-hmm. When's that happening? Saturday?
That is happening Saturday as the Women's March. There's also stuff going on Friday afternoon. I think at 5 o'clock, people are protesting then too at like Wabash and Washington.
So wear your pink that day. Mm-hmm. Pink is a symbol
Femininity,
and it's women's resistance to one of the most anti-women mm-hmm. candidates to ever reach the Oval Office.
And they say it's going to, here in Chicago, they think it's going to be like 56 degrees for January. It's kind of crazy. 2016 was one of the hottest year on record.
So one of our listeners is asking us, Jim Voss, about Alaska.
Oh yeah,
we just
hung out with her the other day. We did a show with her at Roscoe's, where we were her backup dancers dressed up as chickens.
And he wants to know, what do you guys think about Alaska Thunderfuck selling motorcycles on Celebrity Apprentice last night? Should a drag queen really be appearing on a show whose executive producer is Donald Trump? Isn't this the same thing as Jennifer Holliday's performance that was scheduled at the inauguration?
Mm.
Well, Alaska can do anything he wants to. Mm-hmm. But Alaska brought it up to me as kind of like, if people are going to ask you about this. and he basically did not know it was Trump. He probably wouldn't have done it, but... You know, Alaska has been known to make some bad decisions in his life in the past. Mm. He's making very good decisions lately.
I have to say she looked very fierce doing it, because she did a thing where she got up on she was modeling for a motorcycle. And Carson Kressley and Boy George, I guess, had asked her to do it. And it's like, if, Boy George and Carson Kressley asked me to do anything, I probably would. But from what I understand, too, is like, hey, we have a reality TV show gig for you. I can't really tell you what it is at this point in time. So I think that she actually agreed to it.
Without really knowing. Yeah, there was no way to back out of it.
And then this was also filmed, last summer. So yeah, it's like he wasn't president yet. So
it wasn't the candidate.
No. Oh, I'm sure he was a candidate.
Oh, at that time?
I'm pretty sure they probably filmed it over the summer. Okay. So he may have been he may have been selected, or maybe was on the verge, or maybe not. I don't know. But let me tell you, she doesn't seem very proud of it.
Yeah.
And if she could probably publicly say that, it sucks to be on it, then,
I'm wondering, it's like if I were in a situation where they're like, hey, we want you to get on TV show, and then you're on the TV show, it's like funded by Hitler, mm-hmm. You're like, fuck, what do I do? Mm-hmm. It's like, do I risk getting myself into an expensive lawsuit by speaking out against the executive producer of the TV show?
Yeah.
I mean, is like Trump that insane that he requires those people on The Apprentice to sign some?
Well, they probably have to sign stuff that they can't, they can't probably, I don't know what they
bad mouth him publicly.
Maybe.
Meanwhile, Jennifer Holliday went on The View and is doing a lot of media appearances talking about pulling out of Trump's inauguration, calling it a lapse of judgment. And she sounds, when doing these interviews, she sounds kind of like a Tyler Perry character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Jennifer Holliday's like, I live a pretty reclusive life. You're not on the radio. And then one morning you wake up and everybody hates you. She was asked by Joy Behar about her last spin judgment when accepting the invite in the first place. Holiday replied, "I didn't realize that people weren't really over the election. I guess things started back up again. You start remembering things and the fires start burning and the people have not finished with this. They all want to get it all out. I missed all of that."
Mm.
But, you know, and she's sort of talking about that she was called slur words, the N-word. Mm-hmm. And
she was abused online.
She was, attacked, bullied or whatever. But Trump is the one who's doing this. He's mm-hmm. popularizing. He's certainly not the one who's started it, but he's certainly
online bullying happened long before Trump, but he's just
the bully in chief is Donald Trump right mm-hmm. now. And if he wants to stop it, he can stop it.
Mm.
He's popularized disrespect, temper tantrums, and revenge.
Well, people are attacking her for doing it and then also attacking her for pulling out. And so you're going to get it from both ends. So it's going to be a pile on from everybody.
I noticed that a lot of the people who interviewed her, they're all going, "What?" You know, they're all like, "I'm not going." Like, it's like, why didn't you? And I'm like, you know, why didn't Jennifer Holliday take advantage of that pun? You know,
mm-hmm.
be like, "It's all over."
Because she probably doesn't want to associate her song with that.
I guess so. Yeah, because it's probably her most famous mm-hmm. song of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Randy Rainbow, the video blogger, has made this wonderful parody of it.
Because what he likes to do is he, you know, pretends to interview these people and then just makes jokes with them.
Yeah, and it's pretty mm-hmm. good. It's probably Randy Rainbow's best video mm-hmm. ever.
Now, Obama gave his last press conference ever in the White House as the president of the United States, and they asked him about his record on LGBT things and about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He says, "I'm proud of that, but again, none of that would have happened without this incredible transformation that's been happening in society out there." And he says, that we won't lose our rights. He thinks that it's not something that's reversible, but he says the attitudes of young people in particular have changed. That doesn't mean there aren't going to be some fights that are important, legal issues surrounding transgender persons. There's still going to be some battles that need to take place. So, I think he's right, though. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to reverse Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because it'll be crazy for the military to do so. It'll be expensive. And, I guess now, too, in the military, if you're transgender, you can have surgery if the doctors say that you should have a surgery. And then with marriage, you know, the Supreme Court decided it. So those are two of the big issues there.
I'm wondering if that's part of the mindset of Obama releasing Chelsea Manning, who gets out May 17th.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he didn't release her, if he didn't give her clemency, Trump probably never would.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's and he feels, he was asked about that, and he says, you know, she's suffered enough, that she's lived in very incredibly hard conditions, because she's basically been living in solitary confinement since she's been in there. And to be socially isolated, you know, humans are social animals, and we need to be around people.
And so for her not to be around mm-hmm. people for, I believe, has now been 8 years?
Maybe a little less. Than that.
She right now is in modern history, the longest imprisoned whistleblower ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's done her time, and it's time for her to go out. The funny thing is that all these like conservative Republicans are all like, you know, this is a treason, traitor. Mm-hmm. You know how she should be thrown. And I was like, yeah, like if Donald Trump, and you know, it's just a matter of time when his fingers are caught in the cookie jar. He's obviously a puppet for Putin.
Mm-hmm.
When that's actually brought to fruition, our Republicans are going to be, you know, as forgiving with Trump.
They, you know what? They hate him, though. They might string him up just as easily as anybody else. They may just be like, "Get out of here. You're, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens."
Protesters right now, as we speak, are doing a dance protest
mm-hmm.
that Fox News calls a queer dance party.
Yay.
At Mike Pence's house in Washington, D.C. So they're standing out in front of the house and they're like shaking their groove thing.
Shake your groove thing. Shake your groove thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wish I was there for it, you know.
It looks like a lot of fun. I actually went to Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington in 93.
Mm-hmm.
And girl, that was fun. That was craze cray.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have no internet. We didn't have no selfies or no cameras. Mm-hmm. It was LGBT people, grassroots, getting their funk on and putting pressure on America.
Was it, who was it that did a handstand and then peed like a fountain? Was that Annie Sprinkle?
Annie Sprinkle. She didn't do a handstand so much.
Oh.
We were all doing a show together as a benefit for the National Association of Arts Organizations. And Annie Sprinkle was the sort of the highlight, the, you know, when in a comedy showcase,
the
you
keynote,
have the
or the main attraction,
the main attraction. So her performance was just basically recreating the DuPont Circle fountain.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how she did this, but she got a lot of water inside her hoo-ha.
Mm-hmm.
And she put some pigeons hanging, plastic pigeons hanging off from her ankles, throw those legs up in the air, and out came this fountain, the stream, and the audience just started howling.
Oh my God. And that was during the march, right?
Yeah. Well, it was a performance event that, you know, I was in drag. Mm-hmm. You know, drag was such a different thing at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, drag was like a rebellion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about contouring or being fishy or, you know, tricking or confusing or blurring the gender boundaries. It was about just the act of dressing up as a woman or a female character was outrageous enough.
Mm-hmm.
And being openly gay and doing theater of any kind was something that was rare and extraordinary and got people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's like everybody's going to be a drag queen. Everyone's auditioning for RuPaul's Drag Race. There are over 100 famous drag queens that have been on that TV show.
Yeah.
It's not something unusual to be like to say, oh, I'm a fan of drag queens. Who isn't? Well, maybe some of our audiences.
After you get to know them, I've received a few letters.
They're like, you talk about drag queens way too much.
Mm.
So, you know, it was a real magical time, and it was great to do that show with Skip Shirey yesterday. Because, you know, a lot of performance, a lot of theater, it was very juicy. It was very messy. It was very chaotic. And you had, you know, food and... We even did a musical called Food.
Mm.
You had just have Karen Finley sticking cooked yams and Belgian waffles and chocolate syrup and alfalfa sprouts all over her body. You know, Annie Sprinkle sucking dildos on stage and showing her vagina to an audience.
Wild times, folks.
It was pretty intense, you know.
And people are still doing stuff, though. You know?
In some ways, they are, and in some ways, they're not. Like,
you know, it's still pranks around. There's a guy who just he just surrendered himself, I guess, earlier in January. He changed the Hollywood sign to Hollyweed.
Ooh, how courageous in California.
You know, so I guess he just turned himself in, and they charged him with trespassing. So I don't know what will happen, or if I'll have to serve time or pay something. But, you know, they don't like people getting near by that Hollywood sign.
Well, you know, it's like defacing the Washington Monument. You know, it's something that defines a city, a community. And they put a lot of energy and time and money and effort keeping that thing up.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody can just go up there and, you know, modify and change it, it's going to fall apart.
Right. Well, also, too, is like one of the people said that pranks of this nature deplete the resources of our valuable public safety personnel. So, like, you know, they have to chase this down instead of, like, you know, saving kittens from trees.
Well, it wouldn't be a prank if it wasn't inconvenient to somebody, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of pranks and certainly, like, you know, countercultural sensibilities and dirty, juicy, chaotic art. Just as long as the piss doesn't splash on me.
You can wash it off easy enough. Now,
that's the thing about, like, all, you know, we talk, Donald Trump is like, I guess he's being outed as a piss queen. But the thing about it is, it's like, and people have been asking me this question a lot on social media. Have you ever done water sports?
Mm.
And I'm like, you know, I've been in a situation where somebody started peeing and I was like, oh, okay, this will be okay. But of course, inevitably, that pee stream falls on you. And then you're just like, why'd you have to do that?
I don't mind a little bit of pee.
You don't mind it?
No, not a little bit, no.
What about a little poop?
It depends on where it is.
What about somebody accidentally sneezes in front of you? And wow. You're like, I've seen you get mad when I done that.
Oh, yeah, I hate that when people sneeze on you. That's how you get sick.
But the pee's okay, but the sneeze isn't?
So everybody's excited because Will and Grace is. It's actually been confirmed because it had been rumored for a while. Everybody was like, it's not confirmed, but now it is confirmed. Will and Grace will be returning to NBC for at least 10 episodes.
And James Burrow, who directed the series, will be directing at least the very first collection of episodes. And he'll also executive produce. So the original gang that created the series is back. And I think this time they can be openly gay.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, as a comedic creative talent, the actor who plays Seth Hayes, right?
Sean Hayes.
Yeah. Who plays Jack. I think right now he's in a perfect position to play that character.
Yeah.
The same goes for Eric McCormack, Deborah Messing, and Megan Mullally.
Well, before they had to really kind of keep it tame because it was really the first TV show that really had recurring gay people on it. And so they had to tone it down for the masses. And now people are accepted, so they'd be able to make the kind of jokes that they really, you know,
wanted to make
all those years ago.
And Megan Mullally is perfect to now parody this old, drunk, conservative, Trump-supporting, tea-partying woman.
Mm.
So it's going to be good. I think actually the show, you know, Will and Grace served the timid, the tame Will and Grace, Grace served its function back in the day. And now we have Will and Grace, this cat's got claws, meow edition. So it's going to be really good, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody shine, because these are some really Deborah Messing is a comedic talent, and these are some of the finest ensemble actors. They're still alive, they're still around, and it feels like they never left. When we saw that little video that they made for the election,
It was
perfect. It was like
too bad it didn't help win the election.
Well, you know, 3 million votes were cast for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. You know, people a lot want to know, how did we lose this election? And there was a lot of factors that went into it. And one of them
was Will and Grace.
Well, and one of them is that there was not enough campaigning in swing states.
Yeah.
And maybe it was overconfident. Maybe it was gerrymandering. You know, historians have to talk about it. But I certainly was not. I did not feel like Hillary Clinton ran the best campaign. And certainly Donald Trump ran a very dishonest campaign. And certainly the FBI, you know, unfairly, and probably an FBI has been compromised by Russian agents, were releasing information that was damaging to Clinton just days before the election. Whereas they could have also released information about Donald Trump being a Russian agent, a double agent or a puppet at the same time, which they actually did have that information and chose not to release it. So the fact that, you know, our election was stolen from us and, you know, should upset all the Americans. We've never had really in modern times a Republican president that initially won the election on fair terms. Reagan was Iran-Contra, right?
Right.
George W. Bush, he won
election fraud in Florida.
He convinced the Supreme Court to stop the recount in Florida. George H. Bush, the father, was those dishonest Willie Horton ads. They said that's what won him the election. So they've always been lying and stealing and cheating their way into the White House. And this time, I don't think Americans are going to put up with it. I think there a lot of people are done.
I just hope people get out there and vote next time, and especially in these midterm elections. Let's get back the House, let's get back the Senate, and let's put an end to this garbage.
El pueblo bien vestido jamás será vencido. You can't put down the well-dressed town.
What?
Have you heard that one?
No, I haven't.
El pueblo bien vestido jamás será vencido. No. You can't put down a well-dressed town. Dance on the revolution, the queer dance partiers. Oh.
And you can look good for your revolution if you buy a t-shirt at our store at feastoffun.com/store. Get your not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving or a hunty t-shirt.
Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. We are here because you decided make the choice to take Feast of Fun not for granted. We're not clean water in your faucet is something that we enjoy, that we depend on, but it's something that we can't take for granted. You got to put political pressure on your politicians. Mm-hmm. You got to make political donations. You got to be active. And the same goes for your favorite podcasts. If you like Feast of Fun, you want us to be around in the future, make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate or become a premium subscriber and access now 13 years of amazing podcasts ad-free on feastoffun.com/plus.
So what's driving me crazy for the past couple of days is watching Betsy DeVos try and get approved as Secretary of Education. And, you know, everybody's tripping her up on a bunch of stuff that anybody who has any knowledge of the education system should know. And then they also asked her about what she feels about, like, guns in schools. And she says that she feels that it should be decided by the local and states. And she says, I think probably there are, I would imagine there is probably a gun in a school to protect potential grizzlies. Like, she's afraid, like, grizzly bears are going to go into a school and like kill school children.
Wait, the way you phrase that, we're protecting grizzly bears from school children?
I guess.
I agree. School children are dangerous.
Yeah.
Now, Betsy DeVos is, she wants to, her goal is to defund public schools because a lot of people in certain communities feel that the church should be the center of their community and not public schools that are, you know, godless institutions.
Right. Now, the thing with education, though, is there is most education, if I remember correctly, is mandated at the state level. And so the Secretary of Education, you know, they do have some national guidelines, but really, you know, if you do want to affect real change in your school, you do it at the state and local level.
And despite the fact that we have marriage equality and a lot of visibility for LGBT folks in this country, a lot of young people, when they're at their most vulnerable, is when they're most likely to commit suicide and they're being targeted. And so Betsy DeVos being Secretary of Education would make it, if you're concerned about it gets better and making things better for LGBT young people in public education, in any educational situation, you want to make sure that this monster of a woman, this con artist, I mean, she's a pyramid schemer with Amway. You guys know Amway? It's that stupid, you know, real estate agent that's trying to sell you vitamins. And you're like, what the fuck does that have to do with, like, paying my rent on time, you know? I had a real estate agent who managed a property, and she tried to set me up with Amway.
Did she really?
And I was just like, "What the fuck?"
You get into it, and so it's kind of a scam, and so your only way out of it is to get other people into it, you know? And they think you're going to save money. My parents kind of checked it out. I remember my mother getting a box of Amway stuff because she was just kind of like, I think they offered it to her free. And, you know, my parents were raising 8 kids, so they got a free box of, like, you know, cleaning stuff. And we just kind of all looked at it, and my mother was just kind of like, well, we'll use it and just whatever.
Well, at least your parents were smart enough not to get swindled by that stuff.
But you
there's a lot. You go on YouTube and you search for, like, documentaries on Amway, and you can see this Betsy DeVos, she's as crooked as they come. She is as evil as they can get, you know, just stealing money from innocent people, a lot of immigrant families that are new to the country, a lot of Mexican Americans who are very religious, and they get sucked into it at their churches.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah. Amway goes through a lot of people's churches.
And so Amway is also based out of Western Michigan. Actually, which is very close to, like, the gay mecca of Saugatuck, where a lot of gays like to go vacation, is in a very conservative area of Michigan, which is kind of remarkable. And so that area of Michigan is, like, is part of the reason why they went red this season, too, for the election.
Really? Yeah. Because of Amway?
Because of Amway. It's because there's a lot of, I think they're Dutch Reformed Church or something like that. So it's, like, this really very conservative... very conservative Dutch Reformed Church.
I want to do a shout out to Dragula winner Vander Von Odd on winning the first ever drag super monster of the world.
Yay. Congratulations, Vander.
No association with world's first drag queen superstar.
Yeah. America's next drag superstar. And we actually had a chance. Yeah. We actually met Vander when we were out in LA this past year, just before DragCon. We were out there for what was it, the Outfest LGBT festival?
Yeah, and she was there. I guess she was involved in a movie. Mm-hmm. And
she probably had already filmed it by that point in time, too. I would probably. Maybe, or she probably did it this past summer.
And we were like, she's a star.
Yeah.
I mean, she had personality. She was phenomenal. She was able to take broken, any drag queen that takes, you know, garbage from a thrift store, spray paints it pink and shoves it in her wig is all right by me.
That is all right.
Hey, guys, we want to thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a real privilege and a pleasure to entertain you every day for all this time, all these years. We thank you so much for listening. For those of you guys who just started, hold on tight, honey, because 2017 is a roller coaster of fun. Some might say a feast of fun.
Woo!
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
We'll be right back.